welcome to episode 26 of Fly Away, a weekly podcast from Outlander Travel about the thing we love most, travel. Each week, we'll talk about different adventures and vacation options out there, some local, some more exotic. Join us as we chat about our own travels and those of our clients. Hopefully, our talks will help you dream, plan, and get out there. My name is Sandy, and this week, I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Elizabeth, Andy, and Lindsay. Today, our attention drifts across the Atlantic to the beautiful European continent. In particular, we'd like to leverage the expertise of our friend Andy here to talk about Germany. Andy spent 3 years working for a large tour operator as a tour director, taking travelers all over Germany and a few other countries here and there. Andy is fluent in German and French and can talk for hours about the history and sights of Germany in particular. We'll try to keep it closer to 20 minutes for you today, though. All right, let's get started. Andy, tell us a bit about the largest attractions in Germany and where you might want to go.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people who are looking at it, considering a trip to Europe, Germany might not be their first, what they're thinking of first and foremost. A lot of people think, I'm going to take my first trip to Europe, I'm going to hit France or Italy or Greece or something like that. But I want to say that Germany has a lot of sort of things that most people don't think about. You think Germany, you think the Alps, you think beer, you think maybe sort of Munich, but there's such a wide variety of scenery. There's gorgeous beaches up on the Baltic coast. There are primeval forests in Thuringen in eastern Germany. There's beautiful mountains. There's great skiing. There's some of the world's great rivers, the River Rhine, the Mosel. Of course, that all lends itself to wine. It's often overlooked, I think, as a European destination, but there's just so much going for it.
So what you're saying is you like Germany.
Had some happy times. You think of some of the must-see places. I mean, there's so much. You think of fairy tales. You think of the Grimm brothers. You think of small towns like the Pied Piper of Hamelin. Hamelin is a beautiful little town in northern Germany. Rothenburg ob der Tauber is really a living fairy tale village in northern Bavaria. It's a medieval walled city. You can actually walk around the walls. I'm 5'9" and a bit, and I feel really tall. Sandy, you might have a few problems. It just, when they built the walls in the 13th and 14th century, you just realized how short people were back in the day. Wow. But just you walking around this beautiful city, these sort of fairy tale houses, sort of dreaming spires reaching out over the town, sort of everything gilded, these fountains. And a lot of that, if you've been to Disney World, you've seen the Germany Pavilion at Epcot, a lot of these buildings are incorporated into that pavilion. You go to places like Munich, it's a city of about 1.5 million people, but it's a young and vibrant city. Elizabeth, you were there not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm right.
I mean, yeah, it's very,
a lot to see and do
you can
Munich.
Surf in the middle of the city. Where else can you surf in the middle of a city? You can totally surf. Well, I can't. I can't surf anywhere.
Like most German cities, when you finish surfing, you dry yourself off. There is a Japanese pagoda and a beer garden.
Exactly.
I mean, the Germans are living right.
Let me ask you this. Did you have to wear a lederhosen when you were doing your tours?
I did not, but I worked with a lot of hoteliers who did.
Oh, okay. I was totally kidding.
We stayed in the small alpine village of Oberammergau, which is famous for the passion play that they put on every Easter.
I went there too. It's fun to say.
Say it again.
Oberammergau. And that's a real place now. And the thing I love most about that small town, they're known for their wooden carvings, be they religious or sort of farm, rustic life, things of rustic life, so sort of cows and barnyard scenes. But they're beautifully hand-carved. And all the buildings in the town have these frescoes painted on the outside of just sort of, whether it's, you know, a shepherd and his sheep or a mother sort of taking her children down the street. They're beautiful with window boxes of flowers, places to sit outside to have some Apfelstrudel and a good beer and just watch the world go by, all in this crisp setting with really fresh air, babbling brook in the background. And when you're in a village like that, you're only 20 minutes or so away from some of the most photographed buildings in Europe, Neuschwanstein Castle and Linderhof, built by Bavarian King Ludwig II, also known as Mad King Ludwig, who almost bankrupted the state of Bavaria, but now the entry fees alone to his castles keep the state pretty much going.
His stuff is pretty.
And of course, that was the inspiration for Walt Disney for Sleeping Beauty Castle.
You know, I think it's funny. You can really talk about Germany, Andy.
I'm just getting started.
You sound very excited.
But one of the other things that I think that is maybe not so much these days, but when I was running tours over there, it was shortly after the reunification of Germany, and you've got so much history, not just the medieval history or sort of the time of, from the Renaissance, where you had a lot of sort of artists who were brought from Germany to the Florentine court, and great thinkers and storytellers who came from Germany. But the recent history, maybe that's not what people sort of, has the feel-good factor, but you can't deny it. You know, people think Germany is known for two world wars and then being divided. But and a city like Berlin, that's now once again the capital of what was a divided country that was divided in 1945 and not reunified again until 1990.
So you said you were there right after that?
Or? I was there in the mid to late 90s.
So could you still see a difference on the east and west? Because I heard it was pretty stark, you know.
Very much so.
Yeah.
My mother was actually there in Berlin. She went through Checkpoint Charlie about 10 days before the fall of the wall. She said she could sense something in the air. I, to this day, think she still might have had something to do with it. Checkpoint Charlie and vast stretches of the wall were no longer there. Just to drive through the Brandenburg Gate, which you weren't able to do for 40-some years,
is
just awesome. Of course, you have to contend with street vendors selling authentic pieces of the Berlin Wall and authentic Russian fur hats and everything. But you go down this beautiful avenue onto den Linden. People think, oh, East Germany was just stark and there was nothing there. When the city was split and the wall was built in 1961, virtually overnight, whole families were split. But in the East, they had all the art, the history, the museums, and they were kept really intact. All the historical buildings, the palaces, the cathedral, and all these great museums with Babylonian artifacts, Persian artifacts, and all these galleries with old master paintings. And it's just incredible to see this mix of these beautiful buildings that were built sort of in the late Victorian age, juxtaposed with some of the really interesting East German communist Russian style architecture. It was just a fascinating time to be over there. And Berlin is just a great world city now that everything has been built that was under construction in the mid-Sony's European headquarters there, all these international companies coming and making Berlin a vibrant city again. It's now once again the seat of the German parliament. The Reichstag, which was, you know, set on fire under the Nazis, is now rebuilt with this beautiful glass dome and an observation platform. Berlin just has an awful lot going for it. It's a great world city and often overlooked by a lot of people.
Berlin is one of the cities that I've heard of. But another one I've heard of that I love the name, and I actually want an entry to the marathon here, so I really want to go, is Düsseldorf.
Düsseldorf. Wow, that's getting onto the other side of the country in the western part. It's Düsseldorf is an interesting city. It's in the Rhineland, which is the real industrial heartland of Germany, and really not so much on the tourist trail. But I actually went to school when I did my study in Germany, about an hour away from Düsseldorf. You know, I was there from September through about February. Every town and village has these Christmas markets where they set up these stalls. They're selling hot spiced wine, hand-carved wooden toys, and the smell of gingerbread and frying sausages is in the air. It's crisp, it's clear, everybody's bundled up, but everybody's smiling despite the fact it's way below freezing. And Düsseldorf, it's not like some of the big, really big coal mining centers like Dortmund or Essen, where they did a lot of steel production. But it's got glitz and glamour. The Königsallee, you have Versace boutiques, you have Jean-Paul Gaultier has a boutique, I believe. So you've got the glitz and the glamour in an industrial setting. Düsseldorf has a tender place in my heart. A lot of other places that are overlooked and that are big cities, cities like Hamburg or Bremen up on the north coast, you think they're far north, but they're well worth a visit. Germany's shipping heritage, all these cities were city-states that were part of the Hanseatic League of Trading States that traded all over northern Europe. The legacy of that is still there today. There are just some really, really fun places. If you like beer, obviously, it's a place to go. Elizabeth, did you have some good beer while you were over there? You
no, none. Not a drop. You know, it's interesting because Germany is also, history is so important in Germany. You literally can live through so many eras just sort of walking down the street. I spent a lot of time in Munich, which has been, you know, completely rebuilt, which is actually very tragic because you know that there were buildings that must have been gorgeous. And now it's actually quite a modern city. There wasn't much left after everything was pretty much destroyed in the war. So walking through it, you still get that sense of history, but even beer has a history. And I went to the Beer Museum, the Oktoberfest Museum, and have an educational film about beer and what beer really is and what makes beer beer. And there's a great deal of pride.
They are very proud of it. They're so proud that they have laws about what can go into beer legally. And this law dates back to the year 1516.
So would they say that what I drink is beer?
No. Actually, maybe. Sure, yeah.
You might let the world know what Sandy drinks.
I don't mind. Okay. I'm scared. I drink Michelob. You know, I like to light beer because I drink a lot of beer.
Yeah, but they would not consider that beer because the primary grain in it is rice. And that's
So tell me what, because I do like a lighter beer or even like a pale ale, that's usually what my go-to if I'm at a brewery. What would I drink?
You know, here the craft beer movement in the States and in England moving at a pace. And you've got so many different styles of beer from porters and stouts and pale ales and India pale ales and what have you. In Germany, the brewing and the beers that are available are really seasonal. So you get typically a light beer, so it's usually a Pilsner, and a dark beer, which, you know, they just call them Helles, which is light, and Dunkles, which is dark.
Makes it so easy.
To choose from, except at certain times of the year. Most of the breweries do an Oktoberfest type beer. I had the good fortune, I think it was good fortune, to actually attend Oktoberfest twice. And it's an interesting experience. I liken it to an American state fair, but with copious amounts of alcohol.
So is it really worth going to? That seems to be, it's a big bucket list item for everyone, but it seems to me like it's a big, huge bar with lots and lots of people drinking. Is it worth going?
Well, I think you look at it from the historical perspective. It's actually the reason for it. Oktoberfest is for a wedding feast for King Ludwig I of Bavaria in the mid-1800s. And they've held it every year from then, and they tap the kegs. And there's a sense of history and ceremony and parades and festiveness about it. There is a lot of debauchery. There are a lot of sort of roller coaster rides that look like I wouldn't get on them myself. But to enter some of the tents that are there, they seat 3,500 to 4,000 people. Long trestle tables. And you have to be seated at a table in order to be served. And there's no greater sight. I just got such a kick out of this from ordering a beer for a group of 12 when we finally found somewhere to sit. And just seeing one of these Fräulein bring 7 or 8 of these 1 liter glasses of beer and all and across her arms, I just plonk them down on the table. And you know, your group starts going Prost, which is cheers. And everybody else starts chiming in, and you soon become friends with everybody else around you. Then the Umpa band kicks off, and everybody sings German drinking songs. They teach you what, and Ein, zwei, so far. My kids can do that.
You must be so proud.
It's interesting. It's probably better off during the day. Crowds can be quite intimidating. Yeah. But I think it's something that if you like beer, I think you should see it once and sort of draw your own conclusions, but be prepared for large amounts of people who've been imbibing large amounts of alcohol.
Okay, so when I was there, I went to Hofbrauhaus, however you would like to say it correctly. And how does an experience like that, like your typical beer garden on a typical day in Germany at, you know, at any point, how does that compare to Oktoberfest?
It's much more relaxed in a beer garden or a beer hall atmosphere. I mean, sometimes it can get a little bit rowdy, particularly later in the evening. Obviously, you just don't have quite as many people in there, although the Hofbräuhaus does have 3 levels to it. And they have a folklore show in one of the upper levels. I've seen that a time or two.
We were there after a soccer game. It was pretty rowdy. I think the entire arena came in afterwards. Both sides.
Yeah, of course. But it's an iconic place to go and drink. And if we're going to talk about Munich, there are 7 breweries in Munich. And they're the only breweries that are allowed to serve at Oktoberfest. My personal favorite is the Löwenbräu beer garden, or Löwenbräu to us English speakers. It's just beautiful with sort of gilded lion, this lion brew. There's a gilded lion in front of the building. There's just all these tiles everywhere. And it's much less crowded. And it's out a little bit further on the outskirts, but it's easily attainable by public transportation. But anywhere you go in Germany, not just in the big cities like Munich that are known for their beer, you can get a little bit further out. Cities like Nuremberg, a couple of hours north and easily accessible by train. The intercity trains. You rode on the trains, Elizabeth, while you were there.
Totally got lost too, but I actually just got off at the wrong stop, so it was recoverable, but there were tense moments there.
Well, provided you can deal with the German public transportation system and the trains. The cities aren't easy to get to on the intercity express trains. Usually no more than 2 or 3 hours, although from Hamburg to Munich, I think, takes about 6 or 7. But Germany is a big country. But you get in some of the smaller towns in northern Bavaria, places like Bamberg, and they're known for a smoked beer. It's called, one of the breweries there is Echt Schenkeland. Theirs is world famous. In fact, you can buy that in the States. But it's just beautiful. I mean, once again, it's like Rotenburg without the walled city, but it's cobblestones and the old historic districts. Yeah, the Germans really do sort of hold on to their sense of history and heritage. So you do see people in local dress. It's not unheard of to see in Bavaria somebody wearing lederhosen or the ladies wearing these dirndl dresses. You don't see that anywhere else. That's just typical German. It's iconic, beautiful.
I think for me, there was, you know, in my generation, which we'll say is people under 50. For me, Germany was, yeah, anybody under 50. We'll just go with that. Germany was so much about World War II to me that, you know, as a tourist, there was not a whole lot of appeal because I just imagined a place with walls and barbed wire and concentration camps.
For me, my dad was stationed in Germany in the 60s. And so I grew up with, like, beer steins in my house and cuckoo clocks. And
well, of course, from that generation, at the height of the Cold War, there were a lot of you know, Western Army personnel stationed on, Air Force personnel stationed in Germany. And I think Germany does hold a place in a lot of people's hearts for that reason. The Germans, they know that they have this, you know, dark past. But I think, you know, they've learned from it. And I wouldn't say they embrace it, but it's definitely there. One of the things that I saw, particularly in East Berlin, even 40 or 50 years after the end of the hostilities of the Second World War, you'd still see buildings with bullet holes. And that just really sort of gave you a sense of what, you know, life might have been like under the communist regime, where things weren't sort of patched up. There's so much of the recent history. You know, we think about the Cold War, we sort of missed Reagan saying, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." Well, finally it came down, and there's been a lot of social issues tied into that, and you can't sort of sweep that under the rug.
Yeah, because everyone knows about it.
Yeah.
And it's relatively recent. Yeah. But the Germans, what I love about Germany, I lived there for a while, is their sense of environmentalism and their use of public transportation and bicycles everywhere. Everybody thinks Europe, they think bicycles, they think Amsterdam. And yes, that is the case. But I used to walk to the train station in Heidelberg to go get an English newspaper to check the soccer scores every week, 2 weeks that I was there. And I'd be stepping over like hundreds and hundreds of bicycles that were just parked on a Sunday outside Heidelberg main train station. And that's a warning for people as well. If you're not used to that sort of number of bicycles in the streets, just beware, watch your step. We almost lost members of our groups when we'd arrive at our hotel in Frankfurt, for example. The doors of the bus would open. People would, "Oh, there's our hotel." And they'd be wandering in. I'd say, "Whoa, whoa, whoa." You'd hear these ching, ching, ching.
Yeah.
The girls, bicycles would come by. And there's usually a red strip on the sidewalk. And that's the designated bicycle lane. And
they will kill you if you're in it. They will.
Won't be tied, anybody who steps into that.
Yes.
You will be run over.
No regrets. You were in the wrong place.
Oh, my goodness.
The Germans are very proud of their country, and I think with good reason. There's a wide variety of things. If you're into the shipping sort of maritime history or sort of World War II, or you can visit Dachau concentration camp. You went there. You've been there. I've been there.
Yeah, I honestly, on Monday, we were at Neuschwanstein, which is, you know, so old and back in the days of the Bavarian kings. And the next day we were in Dachau. So really, I mean, you can journey through history very quickly in Germany. Just super, super quick. And then the next day we were in a beer hall. I mean, yeah. Really, you can do pretty much anything there.
Yeah, you can be in a 900-year-old medieval castle. You can see Roman ruins at Aachen on the Dutch border. The Romans were very much had a foothold in what is present-day Germany. And you can see anything from sort of modern history, too. That's, we were in Nuremberg, we used to tour some of the Nazi sites where the parades were held in Nuremberg. It's now a truck driver training school. And it's just, you know, it's still there. Mm-hmm. And it's still, you know what it is, but it's been put to another alternative use. That's Germany in a nutshell.
We visited Baden-Baden and saw Irish Roman baths. I mean, in this little town right off the Black Forest.
Irish Roman?
Irish Roman baths. There's apparently a difference between Roman baths and Irish Roman baths. I don't know what they are, but yeah.
Well, I'd be intrigued to find out.
All right, guys. Well, thank you, Andy. That was so awesome to get the information from someone who is...
Bitte schön.
Yeah. Well, that is our show for this week. On behalf of Lindsay, Andy, Elizabeth, and myself, Sandy, thank you for joining us here at Outlander Travel, and we'll see you next week. Gotta fly.